sound level good? Good morning. My name is Eric Riggers, and I've been a member of the fellowship since 2009. Those of you who know me can appreciate how profoundly the fellowship has impacted my life. In the past 2 years, I've served on the ministerial search committee. I've been elected to the board. I met my partner, Karen Schiller, here, and most recently witnessed the birth of our now two-month-old fellowship baby. Before I tell you what I believe, I'd like to see a show of hands. How many of you have a journey that goes something like this? I grew up in a different type of religious community, maybe with a more dogmatic faith that affirmed beliefs which I could not abide, drifted away from that place, and I'm so happy to have found this place. Does that story sound okay? I did that at the first service, and I was like, if people don't raise their hands, it's going to totally screw up my future. I didn't have anything to worry about. So most, okay. So that narrative is very interesting to me, and I am so grateful that we have come to be in community with one another. Your journey is not one that I share, but the reason I mention it will be clear in a moment. My own experience is very different. Although we actually attended East Shore Unitarian Church in Bellevue, Washington, from time to time, I grew up in what I like to think of as a non-practicing UU household. In spite of, or perhaps because of, the lack of specific religious values in that household, the truths of this faith, the faith that we share today, pluralism, tolerance, love, acceptance, were taken as self-evident in my family. Theologically, I'm probably a religious humanist. I'm not a theist. I reject the idea of any knowable being above us, but do anticipate that our collective life force is part of some greater spiritual continuum. I don't tend to conflate my or anyone else's religious identity with their views on mortality, but I'll share mine anyway. When I die, I expect nothing more than to have impacted the direction of humanity in some imperceptibly small but immeasurably important way. So back to the subject at hand, what I believe in the matter of journey, your journey and my journey that I mentioned earlier. Here's what I believe. I believe that what I believe should matter little to you, and what you believe should matter little to me. Don't get me wrong, it's not that I'm disinterested. Your beliefs and your expression of them make a profound impact on me. It's just that these philosophical debates only distract us from our deeper mission, because I believe that what really matters in this faith is not what happens here on Sunday mornings. It's what happens out there the other 6.5 days a week. I believe our faith's primary relevance is in how it informs our mission of justice and of love. I believe we should judge ourselves not by how enlightened and self-righteous we feel at noon on Sunday, but how exhausted we are by Saturday night living those values. I believe that each and every one of us, starting with myself, can and should do more to that end. As for spiritual journey, mine may be different from yours, but it's not that unusual. Until my life hit some hard times, I was too self-involved to contemplate community. I was too self-destructive to love myself and too paranoid about what my friends would think if I went to, quote, church. But I'm older now, wiser, and like you, so happy to have found this place. I love learning about the winding paths we all have walked to get here, but I think it's important not to dwell on journeys any more than on beliefs. Let's focus on the present. Who we are and where we are right now. Thank you so much for joining me in beloved community, and thank you so much for your dedication to our shared principles of love, dignity, and justice.
Good morning. I'm Marta Weldon. Right up front, I'm going to give you a warning. I feel, therefore, I cry. And these kind people listen to this all through the first service. So now that we've had the dress rehearsal, this is going to go much better. I want to thank Roger Birchhausen for asking me to speak today. I'm certain that all of you, in sharing your own stories, could be beneficial and meaningful to the rest of us. So thanks for listening. Preparing to speak to you on this subject has been much more difficult than I anticipated. I've listened to this, I believe, on NPR and thought, I could do that. Not so easy. I rarely speak directly about my beliefs or spiritual practices, let alone tell anyone else what they should believe. This is because I've come to the conclusion that it doesn't matter what I believe. What matters is how I act. It's the same in my relationship with you. It largely doesn't matter what you believe. What matters to me is how you act. I grew up in a congregational church. My mother was the organist, which put our family in the public eye of a large congregation. We dutifully attended church nearly every Sunday, and at one time I could have told you all the books of the Bible, the parables, and the prophecies. I'm not kidding. By the time I reached high school, though, I was deeply troubled and confused, trying to reconcile the realities of my family life and behavior of certain church officials with the teachings of the church. Throughout my young adulthood, I tried on and off to connect with various Christian faiths, including a charismatic fundamentalist church. I never could speak in tongues and got so scared of one group in college, I told them I had joined the other Christian group on campus so that they'd stop calling me. Finally, the Quaker experience of waiting worship, a meeting with silent prayer, in which anyone moved by the Holy Spirit could speak, started to make sense to me. I still didn't feel comfortable in any organized religious body and wanted to reject all of them. However, I did retain the certainty that if I failed to live according to the teachings of Jesus, I would be condemned to hell. It took me about 30 years to reconcile the God of my childhood with my actual life experience. In my late 20s, I experienced an emotional and physical crisis that literally brought me to my knees. My foxhole prayers consisted of, God, if you are there, I need you now. During this time, I met an atheist named Sarge. I was talking with him one day about trying to find God, and he said to me, jump. My eyebrows raised, and he said, jump up and try to stay there. Well, of course, I knew how this was going to end, but I jumped up anyway. When my feet hit the floor, he said, see, there is a power greater than you. Just remember, you're not it. What a relief. No dogma or doctrine for me. From here, I started adopting the practice of spiritual principles such as honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness to my life. Spiritual principles allow me to navigate any life circumstance I encounter. They've served me well through very difficult situations with my health, work, and family. And this practice is why I feel so comfortable in the UU Fellowship, where we are guided by 7 principles. The basis of all spiritual work for me is the concept of letting go. It is really at the heart of everything. Surrendering to things I can't control, letting go of old ideas, and really grappling with forgiveness of others and myself. It works with my teenage daughter, and realizing why old people go to bed at 9 at night. What it comes down to is that in life there isn't much I can control, and trying to impose my beliefs on others does not work. I'm going to end with one of my favorite passages from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It was written by a doctor named Paul O. Acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I am disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact of my life unacceptable to me. And I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be at this moment. Unless I accept life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world as on what needs to be changed in me and my attitudes. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Jesse. What's happening? Okay.
Yeah, it's okay. It's like, okay.
I thought it was like Bunny. We just met. Come on. So in spite of having tattoos and seemingly not having a problem with commitment. I'm not a member of the fellowship. Still working on that. Been coming here for a little over 9 years at different programs on either side of the hallway. So, and it's only been the last couple of years I've been coming here to the services. Going a little closer. Is that better? Back? We're good? All right. So when asked to do this, I guess I immediately succumbed to my 21st century tendencies, and I went online, and I found this. There's this website, BeliefNet, and they have a questionnaire in there called the Belief-O-Matic. And so I took that, and I scored my top one. So the, like, you answer all these questions, and then they tell you like where your beliefs closely match up with what other religious or spiritual practices. And I was 100% UU, and so I'm like, they picked the right person to come up and do this, right? I shouldn't have to join. I already have that. But the group that I sit with the Zen group that meets here on Saturday mornings. Well, not so much Saturday morning anymore, but that one was at 91%, and I said, I need to start sitting more often and get my beliefs in line with that, because maybe I'm not doing it right or something. So I thought about beliefs, and I thought about, you know, my life, where belief systems have gotten me. And one of the first things that came up for me was just how dangerous beliefs can be. I spent, you know, my life, I grew up in Assemblies of God, and, you know, very, very condemning in some ways, and a lot of fire and brimstone, and a lot of, you know, this is the way things are, this is what you need to believe or else. And again, like every week, someone speaking in tongues in the congregation and not understanding that completely, or why I wasn't speaking in tongues on a weekly basis, what wasn't I doing right? You know, and a little bit later in life, I, you know, started getting rebellious and moving away from that, and I went to the other extremes in any way that I could find them, and started finding spiritual practices anywhere I could. And I also got heavily involved with drug and alcohol addiction, and so I found those ways as means of escape and survival and coping with things that had happened, you know, throughout life. And so those things became my beliefs. I had made up in my mind, you know, that you could not convince me the way I was living was destructive or was hurting me or hurting those around me. This is the way it was. And I can argue you with you until the very end that this is the way it needs to be. And so I did that, you know, for quite a while. And eventually I had to get to a place where those belief systems, the things that I were holding on to, you know, got me to a place where it was so painful, where it was so bad that I had to let go of them. You know, and that really opened my mind up and opened my eyes up to everything that was going on around me and the destruction that my beliefs caused. And so I, you know, started looking at different things, and eventually it led me to finding the Zen sit that meets here, like I was talking about, the Zen River Sangha. And I've been sitting there for about little over 6 years, and so when I was asked to do this too, my first inclination is like, well, I'll just go up there, introduce myself, and make everyone meditate for 4 minutes, and there you have it, you know. Sit down, shut up, and don't look away, you know. That's it, you know. Just be in it, be here now. The last service, someone was talking about how they grew up in a place where they could just kind of have this free form of spirituality all over the place, and there was really no structure or routine to it. And I thought about that for myself, and knowing that, you know, week in and week out, when I go to the sits with, you know, at the sanghas with everybody, like the structure is always there every week, of what we do and the rituals and the practice, and finding like that, I find a lot of freedom in that. And then also finding within, you know, that certain lineage that I practice, you know, the principles that are part of it, and you know, if you're not familiar, like the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, you know, those principles are things that I can practically, you know, I can apply on a daily basis and do my best in. But again, yeah, I started holding on to them too much. You know, there was a point where I left the Sangha for a little while, and because I started even wearing Buddhism as like this stone thing around me that was holding me down, like it had to be a certain way. I wasn't doing Zen right, if that makes sense. And, you know, and I eventually found my way back and found that, you know, I got to learn to to hold on to it loosely, but also hold on to it so that it provides some direction, it provides some guidance in life. But the minute I think I got it figured out, the minute that I start comparing it to yours, the minute I start thinking it's better than yours, is the minute I got to let it go. Because then it starts turning into conflict. Then it starts turning into my beliefs are dangerous. And I'd rather not have dangerous beliefs. I'd rather just have open ones and try to work from there the best I can. But it's a daily practice and it's a daily struggle. You know, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's not easy. And it can be simple as I want to make it. You know, but that comes to my practice. That comes to my accountability for my beliefs and my spirituality. So grateful that I could have this opportunity and pass.
Good morning. Are you hearing me? All right. I'm not sure if I can do it this close. Is it different from this morning? I don't know. Okay. My name is Dawn, and I was born and raised Catholic, but I was never really a Catholic. I thought at the time that I was against organized religion, but turns out that wasn't it. Turns out I just couldn't find any meaning in my religion of origin. Y'all have probably seen the t-shirts, to question is an answer. They're UU t-shirts, and probably half of you or so have them. Generally, we as UUs honor the journey over the destination, but apparently I like commitment. So as I explored my authentic me, I felt the need to claim and collect those spiritual truths that brought me inspiration and meaning. Science, philosophy, and ancient religions were my major sources. I want to apologize in advance for the depth. Trying to explain the basics of my spiritual beliefs is a little bit like hosting a game of Mental Twister. Hope you all stretched before you got here. I did bring a spinner. Let's not break the church. So this, I believe, there exists now and forever two realms of reality. One is the material realm and the other is the conscious realm. The material realm is easy. It's stuff. Your chair, this building, the plants outside, and even our physical beings. It's everything that is made up of atoms and influenced by the forces of nature. That's material. And it's the stuff that we typically define as real. The conscious world is a little harder to define. In this context, I'm not talking about wakefulness, but rather focused presence. Consider a considered thought, self-realization, meditative states, and creative processes. These are all part of the conscious realm. If you think about it, when I eat an entire bag of barbecue sweet potato chips while watching my favorite DVD, Tu Wong Fu, I'm awake, but I'm not conscious. Y'all know what I'm talking about. This, I believe, if a rainbow is not experienced, it never existed at all. This kind of makes sense because a rainbow is a playful interaction between light waves, water, optic nerves, and a brain. But according to quantum mechanics, without an observer, the chair on which you're sitting on doesn't exist either. Science shows that atomic particles are only waves of possibility until they're observed. If not experienced, the chair, your chair, like a rainbow, never existed at all. This, I believe. The basic building block of our reality is consciousness. Remember the old question, which came first, the chicken or the egg? For me, the chicken came first, because the moment the first wave of a possible conscious chicken vibrated into existence, the entire history of the unconscious egg snapped into actuality. The self-aware chicken created the egg. That is assuming, of course, that the chicken is actually self-aware. We'll have to ask the chicken. This, I believe, we are one. My observance of this coffee mug, snaps it from the possible coffee mug into the actual coffee mug. But there are many of us in this room, and we all have our personal conscious experience. But together, I think, we all agree on the existence of my coffee mug. So why do we agree if we're all separate? Maybe the better question is, why do we believe that we are separate? Our shared material world experience is proof that our separateness is an illusion. We are all one consciousness. This, I believe, God is all, everything, and everywhere. If you look for God, you will find God. It doesn't matter the path you take, the name you call out, or the image in your head. If you're looking for God in any form, you will find God, because the only thing that is God. But as a UU, I'm still open for debate on that one. This, I believe, my birth determined my religion of origin, but my beliefs determine my faith. In December, if you all come to my house, you're going to find a Christmas tree. I've had a Christmas tree my entire life. But the religious label I choose for myself is UU Hindu. I'm a paradox. I think that's pretty healthy, actually. And I'm kind of partial to paradoxes. So tell me, what do you all believe?
Thank you, all four of you, for sharing with us. What an awesome panel.